The aim of Black Mental Matters is to tell experiences with honesty. Therefore, some discussions may trigger an adverse reaction. If a discussion is beginning to upset you, we advise that you please stop listening and talk to your support team.
Welcome once again to Black Mental Matters. This is episode number 41. I'm Vince the Voice, and I tell you what, there's a lot going on mentally in the Black community right now. This program, again, was designed to address the stigma as it relates to mental health in the Black community, let folks know that you're not alone and all those kinds of things. There is support out there, and there is a positive outcome even when there's lots of adversity. And boy, are we in an adverse time right now, whether it's this pandemic, which is affecting the Black community more than anyone else, whether it's these race protests that are going on, the statues, the criminal justice system, police. Oh my goodness. So on today's program, Makiba Reed Johnson is back with me, and we're going to chop up some things and hopefully educate the diseducated. Just a touch. It's Black Mental Matters, and it starts right now. It's Black Mental Matters, and ladies and gentlemen, she's back, and she's black. It's my girl, your girl, the number one girl. It's Makiba Reed Johnson. Hey, Makiba.
Hey, Vince the Voice Bailey. Thank you so much for holding it down for me these past few weeks. I really appreciate it.
Oh, girl, you know, it's my, this is what we have to do, and it feels so good to have you back in the saddle. And again, I didn't tell our listeners, but you experienced a loss, and our thoughts and prayers are with you and your family.
Thanks so much.
The loss of your dad, who's a great, great man.
Definitely. Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah, he passed away June 8th, and yeah, he was my best friend, and it hit me hard, especially just with the, you know, COVID-19, and he was in memory care, so the facility was on lockdown since March. So I hadn't had a chance to see him until he was dying. So, and that's when they let me in the facility. So that was a lot to take in. I've been really having to, you know, be really deliberate with my self-care right now, and just kind of limiting social media, because I don't feel good after being online too much, just with the bantering back and forth and, you know, all the stuff that's going on. So, but thank you so much for that. Thank you so much for your prayers and your thoughts, and just for, you know, keeping it moving, and for, you know, continuing to put out our content to the listeners out there, and just also keeping me in your mind and in your prayers. I really appreciate it.
Of course. And just this time, the way it is with the pandemic, the COVID, I mean, there are so many, it really struck me yesterday as I was working in the yard. I mean, I almost gave into tears. I was listening to a show where you're not able to be with your loved ones in nursing homes. Oh my God. We really got to get a grip on what we've done and what we're doing these days, because
it is, and
moving forward, our mental stability. I'm so glad with your self-care. And you said June 8th. It was June 15th for my mom, June 8th for one of my brothers was on June 8th. So
I didn't know that. Oh, I'm so sorry.
One of my other brothers, on June 8th. Wow. So we're all in this thing together, folks. I mean, this is this isn't just a show. We're really trying to, and so that's why today, Makiba, I'm calling this one the diseducation of racism towards, you know, the Black community, you know, blacks, blacks. And I like to say, there was even the question, so say, what do you want to be called? And I was like, what? And, but prove me wrong, but I like Black American. I'm a Black American is what
I like that too.
You like that too?
But you know, I do.
Since the very beginning, you know, Christopher Columbus came over here. First, they wiped out the, the Native Americans from a million to 240,000. Then they forcibly transported Africans from their homelands to be sold and abused as slaves. The mobs attacked the African Americans. We just had the Tulsa anniversary just recently, and wasn't that crazy with Juneteenth? Then you got Jim Crow, and so like you said, now we're online going toe to toe. And it's a diseducation, right. And I don't feel like educating white folks either right now. However, these banters back and forth are being taking place multiple, I would say millions of times almost a day now, right. whether it be through social media or on the job. And how do we as black folks, who first of all, white folks, let me tell you, we're not trying to get any, I have never heard in my whole time a black person talk about like some revenge or something like that, ever.
Mm-mm. No, you're absolutely right. Yeah, so yes, and that's why it's really hard to understand where the anger and the pushback for the Black Lives Matter movement is coming from, because you're absolutely right. We're not asking for something to be taken away from someone else. We're not depriving someone else of some liberty or right that they should have. We're just asking for something for ourselves, and it's not taking away from something else. So it's really confusing, but it at the same time, Vince, it's extremely eye-opening. And I'm going to reference back to this really great book that I've been reading on the history of clinical psychology in Georgia, and the mindset of slave owners, and how that has been passed down through history, that once you in your mind believe that a person or a gender or a culture of people are less than human, then you can do all kinds of things to them and not have an emotional, normal human response to it. And I think that's part of what's happened. I think that a lot of people have just been conditioned to not have empathy or compassion for Black people. And there's just this overall premise or this overall feeling of, when we do start to speak out, it's this immediately response of, well, they just want something for nothing and they're looting. I mean, I can say, you know, for myself, my family owns businesses in West Atlanta. And the night before the protest started, I actually called one of the managers and told him to make sure that we have, you know, our liability insurance is up to par, make sure he knew where the policy is, to make sure that the cashiers and everyone in the stores were being polite and respectful of the protesters, to know what to expect.
Yes.
And he actually told me, his response back to me was that his issue during the protest was he had an issue with something that had nothing to do with the protesters. It was just during the protesting that some people came into one of the stores and were just antagonizing the employees there and were just giving people in the store a hard time. And so they tried to call the police, and the police never showed up because all of the police had been, you know, dispatched to man and work the protest. But my point is that as a business owner, I was prepared for the looting of my own businesses, because I understand the impact of racism. It pisses you off after a certain amount of time, when you are made to feel powerless and that your life and who you are and your existence doesn't mean anything. So I understand it. And I, as a business owner, I was ready to respond the next day to having my stores looted. And that's why I don't understand why, when I'm looking at different people's responses on Facebook of, hey, you know, this is inappropriate, but baby, you don't own nothing in a place that, what are you talking about? You don't own nothing. You're not a business owner. What are you talking about? I I've seen so much pushback from people that I thought that I knew, you know, people I thought that I had a good friendship with or a working relationship with. And now I'm getting to know that these are the same people, the same people that have been in my circle, have been part of this, you know, movement that's perpetuated violence against innocent, unarmed Black people. And it's disgusting.
It's disgusting. As you said, I mean, it literally was in the law or constitution or wherever it was on paper here in the United States, that a Black American was 3/5 of a person. So come on now. Right. Now, where, I mean, who, you know, it comes up with these things. So as time goes on, I mean, maybe now we're just being able to be looked at as a real person.
Yes.
And then on top of that, people that are disposable, that are, I mean, when you see the Aubreys and the Floyd, mm-hmm. and these situations like that, and so then we, like you say, then we have to go with social media, and you have to justify each and every little situation. And I'm tired of doing that. I'm tired of doing that. You know, sometimes I just got to jump in because it's just so ridiculous what has been said.
Yes.
But it's, I mean, even despite we had Barack Obama as the first president, color, race, ethnicity still remains this intractable, pervasive issue that we still are dealing with over and over and over again. And I feel sorry for those who cannot articulate, because all it does then is make you just boil inside even further. You know,
absolutely.
If you're not articulate, if you can't, you know, write well to respond to something, or however, it just it drives you. And then here we go. We're mad again. We ready to tear up some stuff some more. You know,
right? No. Yeah, you're right. This just the anger that's coming from Black people is from hundreds of years of this. I mean, this is not something new. This is hundreds of years of being made to feel like you as a human being are not essential. You're not important. You're not valid. Your life doesn't matter. Who you are is insignificant. You can't internalize that and not have an output. I mean, it has to be some type of output. So that's why you're also seeing the looting and the anger. And a lot of white people don't know how to respond to the anger because they're looking at the anger and not what's causing it. And when you have not been in a position where you've experienced discrimination, it might be hard for you to understand what it feels like, because no one's ever been able to make you feel uneasy about the cops pulling behind you, or, you know, being racially profiled in a store, or, you know, getting arrested and then ending up dead. I mean, that's not a daily concern for some people. So that's where that lack of empathy comes from. But we can't put it upon ourselves to educate everyone on this, because of the thing that we've talked about, Vince, on other podcasts. This too is weathering us.
Yes.
This too, every time you get on your personal Facebook page and you even see someone saying all lives matter, blue lives matter, I'm sick of these people, you know, that are out here tearing up the city, I'm sick. It does something to you internally. It does something to you physically. This is why we have the health problems and the mental health issues that we have from the weathering of just always being subjected to the stress of having to deal with most people in the country that you're interacting with on your Facebook page across the nation don't care about you being alive.
No.
I mean, damn, that's deep
that
when
hurts.
You really look at it. It does. And it's not that we're just mad because somebody, you know, said something to us, or a president made a policy somewhere. We are hurt and we're upset. Parents are scared for their children. This is a deep emotional pain and hurt and rift that we have, and we cannot look to white people for the healing. It has to be an internal movement. It has to be, of course, with allies, of course, but you cannot make a racist not a racist. You can identify who they are and then mute them on your Facebook page or Twitter or Instagram or whatever. If you are online and you see anything that makes you feel bad inside when you read it, you need to take action and remove that person's profile off your feed.
Yes.
Period.
Yes.
I don't care who they are.
Yes.
I mean, because then you're bringing that into your house. You're bringing it into your home. You're sitting in your bed reading something racist. I mean, you can't allow that to be this close to you when we have the issue of weathering and the health implications that comes with.
And this, on top of it, with the pandemic, it just brings it out even more. I was telling you, you know, this, these strings of trauma that have taken place, going back to 2008, but way before that. I mean, how many times, you know, the Emmett Till's, and way even before that, and way even before that, and things that we have no clue of. We're just these days, because we have cameras, that we're able to witness these. And that, how terrible is that, to be able to witness someone's life being taken away from them unnecessarily, basically murder, and then you're just supposed to get along again. And so I put out there to folks, I mean, because, you know, this country is built on, you know, commerce, and ain't nobody shopping right now. Ain't nobody working right now. And so this is some education for folks, in that you better get this stuff. We better get this stuff together and pull together, or there will be even more hardships and consequences as a result. And I think that's why you see the push. Oh, yeah, let's open up. Let's do this. Let's do that. No, I love these young people. You are part of the reason. You have worked with some young people. They are on the front lines, and they are not saying, they're not bagging down. They say, this is wrong. This is wrong. You know, Dr. King and them said it was wrong, but they were more like, you know, kind of a little more passive about it. Just, no, these young people. And wait. When we talk about the looting, when you see the police station that was burned in Minnesota, when you see the Wendy's that was burned here, when you see there was these were white folks that burned that lit the fires.
Come on.
The diseducation. Right. You talking about what? No. And then everyone, what happens is you get caught up with this excitement delirium. And then, well, shoot. Hey, she just threw that Molotov. Let me throw a rock.
No, no, no. No, you are absolutely right. In fact, I was talking to my sons, 24 and 21. We were talking about the, what do you call them again?
Molotov cocktail.
Molotov. I can never pronounce that. And I was telling them, and they were even agreeing with me, how many black people do you know that carry those around?
Right. We don't do that. We're looking for a rock on the ground, you know?
Yes. We are scared to light something that we think is going to go up in our hair.
Yes.
I know that for a fact. Yes. I know that is not something collectively as a culture that black people are carrying around in their backpack to a protest.
Even fireworks. I don't like fireworks. I don't miss that. Sparklers? No.
I'm the same way. I'm scared of them.
I'm like, hey, that's fine. You know, come on.
It's gonna blow up.
we are not like that. We are not. And the result, because then, like you say, now we can't say, you know, what lives matter and all this kind of stuff. And the first thing that come out of someone's mouth is, what about all this black on black crime? Well, if you were discriminated against and boxed in and just put down, and you're gonna be taking this out on somebody. And a lot of times you end up taking it out on the people that you know.
In addition to that, Vince, the term black on black crime, that actually is not even a thing. I did some research a few years ago on just where that phrase came from, and that phrase came from the attempt to vilify black communities and to earmark them as being dangerous, or, you know, or even it goes into the whole thing of, see, this is why we need to be, as a nation, more violent towards these people because they are violent. They're, you know, they're having, they have crime in their own neighborhoods. You don't hear about any other statistics. You don't hear about white on white crime. But if you're going to talk about black on black crime, then let's talk about white on white crime. Where's the data? There are plenty of white towns that have crime rates. There are plenty of communities that are not predominantly black that have crime statistics, but it's never lumped into this data set of the category of black on black crime. That is used as a racial term to vilify black communities. Period. I can tell you this, when we first got our first store over near the West End in West Atlanta, it was because we were part of a dealership, and I'm not going to mention the oil company, but nobody wanted these stores in these black communities anymore. So we got them for a really good price. So when we started running them, there was this huge learning curve of the community getting to know who we were. And we saw a lot of crime within the store, on the lot, in the community that had nothing to do with race. That was about poverty. Yes. Poverty, lack of opportunity, yes. Lack of housing, yes. You know, no stores. Yes. So and we as black people who were the owners, we understood it. And what my father did, and I just love him for teaching me this lesson so much. Yes. He actually made sure that all of the employees were trained to treat every single customer that came in like they were royalty. Mm. And when we started doing that, the entire demographic of our little bubble in our business area completely shifted, where we didn't see that crime. We actually had people, I mean, either people that, you know, were homeless or people that, you know, were just, you know, in the West End that would actually help patrol our lot. Yes. And tell us what was going on, tell us, you know, things that were going on in our area. They actually became like a little family to us, and the crime went down because of how we were treating our own people. Yes. And before then, it had been white owned. It was white people. They were not understanding of how to talk to the black customer. You know, there's some things that you say, there's some things that you don't say. There's a way to make sure that when you're coming into a black community, to first of all, black people like to know when you're coming into their community and you're setting up shop and you're owning a business and you're asking them for their money, you need to treat them with some respect.
Yes.
You need to treat them with some respect. And there also needs to be a feeling of, or an understanding of, hey, we as the owners, we are part of this community. Yes. We are giving back in this way. We want to be transparent with you about what we're about, our business model. You know, we are part of this community, and we're not just here just to blood suck off of you and then go back to, you know, wherever side of town that we're on. We are here to give back to this community. And that's where a lot of that tension with business owners that aren't black in black communities feel, and they think that it's racism against them. And no, it's not. If we see Asian Americans in a black community, if you own a nail salon, if you own whatever, are you giving back to the community? Are your kids enrolled in school in the community? Are you paying taxes towards anything in that area? Do you
sponsor,
know,
kids, teams or something like that? Boy, you use a strong term there, blood suck. And that that made my heart beat for a minute, because that's kind of where all of this stems from. They've been blood sucking. Yeah. And I want to be clear, because, you know, mm-hmm. you and I both, we have lots of, as they say, I'm not racist. I have white friends too. You know, and I do. And they know, right. And they know me, and they know you.
But and they're awesome. Yeah.
And they're awesome folks. But they then, are. As you said, they've just come out with this new app. that allows you to identify racists, and that app is called Facebook. Yes. People putting this stuff out there, you like really you know, sometimes they say if you don't have something good to say, you shouldn't say nothing at all, because you are talking some stuff that and thank you for confirmation, because I have been deleting and muting people. Mostly delete. I don't even, just goodbye. I learned a long time ago, take my marbles and, you know, and so we've got to be, you know, we got to keep the pressure on right now is my thoughts about all of this, because change is actually happening. And I would encourage my Caucasian folks out there to do some real research, do some real asking of questions, talk to some of your friends, you know, and find out, honestly, why or how we got to where we are today. It'll be worth it. I guarantee it'll be worth it.
I totally agree. But we also, in that same breath, need to make sure that, just like what you said, some of these relationships are expendable.
Yes.
And you need to now set your boundaries with people. If you see them out on the street, hey, how you doing? Dap, you know, hey. But they should not be in your personal space, and especially with your online stuff where they have access to your family photos and your personal information. Please make sure that you delete people that are making you feel uncomfortable with racist rhetoric, period.
You know, some of the worlds that I work in, and it has been brought back to me. Vince, don't do it. Don't, you know, you I saw what you said about her. Don't do it, Vince. And I will admit, I did. I pulled back. I said, yeah, you know what? It's really not worth it because these threads end up going, you know, 400, 500, you know, comments.
Yeah,
and right. Some people, their whole mission is to create chaos and make you angry, and
because they have nothing to lose. They have nothing to lose. Absolutely.
And we do. But at this time, we have everything to gain as well. So, once again, you know, I missed you, but we had some good. Yeah. I had people from the NAACP who came on and talked, mm-hmm. to working on the front lines. My cousin, who's a Illinois State Police commander, and he talked about, you know, policing while black and you know, that whole dynamic in our communities. There's a lot of research, my white friends, for you to do to learn why and how we got to this place. And I'm hopeful. To me, this is opportunity time. I kind of thrive in chaos. You know, it's like, okay, for my business, it's like, okay, so now you need to do a video or something like that about this, right? And so I think also, we as our community, black community, we got to make sure we get our real stories out there and hold up the real, you know, heroes like your dad. Mm-hmm. I mean, I you know, nothing against Jordan, and I love LeBron and these, you know, these athletes and entertainers. But what about our community leaders who have really contributed to the livelihood, to the success of so many families, providing jobs? I'm sure mentorship to young men, and I'm encouraging all of our men out there to do the same. You know, let's keep these young people under our wings, and thank God for what you did all those years, you know, at the HBCU. So,
thank you.
Yeah. So good to have you back, Makeba.
Oh, thank you, Vince. It is really good to be back, and I'm so glad that I'm actually back in an environment that is supportive of Black mental health. So thank you for creating this platform, because I need this right now for myself. So thank you so much.
And for those of you who used to listen to us, yes, we had to vent today because we mad. We mad in a mofo. Pardon my friend.
We tired.
Can I say
tired,
that?
Man.
Can I say we tired?
Yes.
We tired.
It's your show. It's your show. You can say whatever you want.
But hey, all you got to do is look. You know we love everyone. We just tired of those haters hating on us.
We are.
You know.
We are.
So thank you so much, Makiba. And hey, this is Black Mental Matters. And
absolutely. You're welcome.
God bless.